There are really interesting possibilities, applications, and use cases at the intersection of AI and healthcare. In this episode of the Zista podcast, we're going to go deeper into this subject matter. Welcome to the Zista podcast, where we invite industry leaders and academicians to answer questions that students have within a particular area. We've been seeing a lot of interest in how AI is being used in different industries, and today we're focusing on healthcare. Joining us today is Sumit Manier, a gentleman with over 25 years of global experience in product, business development, operations, and product leadership. He's worked with SaaS, B2B, and B2B2C verticals. He's worked in different geographies, worked in game industries like gaming, and more recently, he's been focusing on the healthcare space. He's associated with Cipra.ai and has previously also been the CEO of Wellbrain. Let's go straight into this session. Hi, Sumit. Welcome to the Zista podcast. We're delighted that you're joining us here today.
Yes. Hi, Amit. Nice to meet you. It's been a few years since we've seen each other, but nice to meet you.
Indeed, indeed. Let me start by saying thank you. I know you're based in California, so it's pretty late in the night where you are. So thank you for agreeing to do this session so late in your night.
Yes, no worries, no issues there.
Great. I'm really excited to talk to you about, you know, things that are happening at the intersection of AI and healthcare. And, you know, you personally have got a lot of experience in this space. So from your perspective, what do you believe is the most significant application of AI in healthcare today?
The most significant application in AI is now, not because it's in the vernacular or popularity, is the generative aspects of AI when it comes to specifically in areas such as nursing care or physician care, because the amount of knowledge required to deliver that care, especially like at a hospital setting or other types of solutions, requires almost like assistance or deep detailed knowledge. So I think on the generative front, AI is going to be significant. Historically, where I've worked in, it's for those people who know some levels of AI, is I've had experience in working with large data sets, and then we'd have the proper labels and where the models get trained on, that's called supervised learning. And I think generative AI takes it to a whole different level where it could take unstructured data and structured data to then deliver insights or recommendations. So I think in that aspect, it's going to be a huge impact in delivering better value in healthcare, minimizing mistakes, making better recommendation, using different types of data. Another example is this company I'm working with called Cipra.ai, where one component of it is this semi-supervised or supervised, but what it does is N of one learning based on population health data such that it can make precise one-off recommendations that's more personal to you, which is very powerful. And then some generative AI elements come to it to fine tune it to make the recommendation more impactful when it comes to diet and what have you not. But that the solution is focused on reducing hypertension. And there are all these other advantages that the AI can deliver, such as reducing staff's time to do reach out and what have you not. So here, the solution is driving efficiency, better results, and then you're ultimately having better health outcomes and you don't have the complexity or have to rely on as much staff or, you know, often cases in healthcare, there's staffing shortages. So I think the opportunities in healthcare from end to end, from the care side, all the way to the back end and systems management is going to be immense.
That's really interesting. From what I hear, but naturally in the field of healthcare, there's a lot of data that's being generated. So maybe the AI is playing a role in, you know, crunching that and creating some distilled insights that the healthcare provider can actually act upon. And it's really acting, let's say, as your personal assistant in that sense, helping you. But I can imagine that the person who is actually doing the end job is taking a judgment call, looking at the input and not just acting on the input blindly. Would that be correct?
Correct, correct. And I can give you another example, like you pointed out when I was CEO of WellBrain, and here we were getting up to the system of building the AI. We had the vast data sets. Here was the use case where we had a digital health app where encompassing several technologies from my previous experiences. And what it was a multiple B to C solution. And what that meant was it was focused on enabling physicians to prescribe mindfulness, meditation, and other solutions that were more conservative to reduce patients' dependencies on high prescription drugs. Here in the States, there's this problem with the opiate epidemic, which are, you know, very powerful drugs, but they're very addictive. But what could you do to offer to these patients? And so that's what we did at WellBrain. And in this solution, we would get inputs from patients and then fine-tune that personalization, but they can be offered virtual physical therapy, access to neuromodulation, which is an electrical stimulation in an outpatient procedure here in the United States that sends electrical current to defeat the pain waves. So all these different types of solutions there. And what happened was over time, we would amass so much data and then we'd have outcomes. And as you suggested, the plan was then to make a recommendation engine such that, hey, saying woman age 35 with this type of pain and these type of conditions, you might want to consider device A or B, and the practitioner doesn't have to second guess or ask his colleagues or try to look at all his patients' data. He has the power of all this data from across all our customers to then make the informed decision more correctly to the patients, like, this might make sense because I didn't think of it. Let's try this. So I think that's a perfect example of where AI can be working quite well.
In terms of application, you know, I see so many possibilities. Imagine where, you know, in a country like India, for example, where some of the top cities have got fantastic medical facilities and staff. And in some of the smaller cities, we definitely see medical infrastructure catching up. Things are improving, but there are also situations where staff deployed in these places may not be as experienced. And therefore, having access to a strong recommendation engine, which is relying on some good data sets, can help some of these medical practitioners perform better. So that itself, you know, is also, or that by itself is also really interesting as a use case.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the fascinating things and unintended consequences of India is, in a way, it's good what Jio did to the market to drive penetration and adoption of cell phones and even broadband almost throughout the country. So people are using and adapting these technologies much faster. And I see it firsthand, even with this Cipro.ai solution, which is focusing on hypertension, diabetes, which is very prevalent with many South Asians. And the adoption in India is much faster because US is too regulative and there's too many concerns to get approval. Whereas in India, the market dynamics allow for better adoption. And to answer your question, at a much more affordable cost and in a scalable format, because what the Cipro solution does is it takes away 90% of the workload of the manual process of trying to call a hypertensive patient. I think in India, blood pressure monitors are low cost, and now you have lower cost, whether it's a boat watch or, you know, smartwatch.
Sure.
And if you get that data, then the AI does 90% of the work, and then it could be done remotely, and then you could scale much more efficiently and cost effectively. So again, you're getting better health outcomes, and then here's a perfect use case of it working in a challenging environment such as India, especially the tier 2, tier 3 cities where I think AI can work. And all you need is a smartphone now, and you can even work without a smartwatch. So it's very interesting. And so with Cipra, we're launching it in parallel, both US and India, but we're seeing the adoption in India much faster.
Interesting. What you're saying is really exciting, you know, something that is really adding value and being done in a way which is affordable and scalable. I think the world needs more solutions like that. But one thing comes to mind, you know, when you think about healthcare, you know, data privacy in any case is really important, but the way you manage data within healthcare systems is even more critical. So from your perspective, how are companies managing the ethical considerations when you're integrating AI into wellness and healthcare spaces?
So yeah, I think the focus or emphasis is, you could call it privacy first or privacy first, and then also safety. And all digital health entities or any health entity has to follow various US standards for health privacy laws. And you know, they have to be doubly encrypted. The use of AI, I mean, we used everything on our own premises. We didn't push the data out. And if the data was ever used on an external factor, it was completely de-identified, meaning you could not do any type of attribution, or no one in the future can infer from that data set that this is that person. But from a holistic perspective, in order to do certain types of studies, we had to, with respect to WellBrain, marry some of our data with some external data. And we worked with a third party company to ensure that. But every step of the way, we had to make sure that, you know, PII, which is also there in payments, you know, personal identification information. And then also in the States, it's called HIPAA, Health Information Patient Portability Act, where, you know, records have to be stored in a certain format and you have to follow these processes. So that's always there because the liability is much larger, especially here in the States, if you don't follow those types of protocols. So I think the mindset is always there to keep patient records and data as intact as possible.
That's good to hear. And I think it makes sense because you're really taking the risk factor out, and yet you're still deriving the benefits that you can get from integrating AI into healthcare. And as you said earlier, it's about doing it affordably and, you know, focusing on scalability. So that's really good. Smith, from your perspective, you know, what are some of the biggest challenges that healthcare providers face when they're deploying AI technology in the solutions they offer?
So I think what has happened, as with all new technologies, is there's a lot of noise and a lot of people claiming they can do AI. So one of the challenges we come across is a physician will say, well, I just talked to 7 or 8 different companies and they do this AI and that AI. Then you have to get them to the point to help them understand what is going on. And then it clicks to him saying, oh, we're doing this, and they are not doing definitely true AI. So there's a lot of confusion going on. And when there's confusion going on, it takes a lot more longer to, what is it called, adopt a new technology. So that's one thing. A second thing, like you might have correctly alluded, it is a behavioral change in the sense that if I'm using this AI-based solution, do I trust it? And I think right now in general, you know, there's all these concepts that are coming about. And it's actually, if you think about it, it's just simple concepts. You have to validate what the response is. In generative AI, there's this concept, they call it RAG, which is basically retrieval augmented generation. But all it is APIs to external data sources to further validate the solution so you can fine tune it, but you're always a human in the loop looking at the data. So I think that's another challenge. And then the third thing is solutions that work, irrespective of AI in healthcare, are those solutions that really think about all the steps that a practitioner has to go through and their staff, anyone connected to the solution, such that it reduces their workload from current workflows. So, for example, I've seen so many digital health solutions not succeed because it added all these steps of, oh, you got to use this iPad and type it this way and open this app. Meanwhile, the staff member is like, you know, I don't want to really use this. Well, the physician wants to use it, but the staff member is saying it's increasing my workload. So right. We optimize for that. So even little nuances like having a shift key to type a capital letter, we eliminated that functionality so it could speed up the process. So you have to think it through. So I think it's more of a human-centered design on some of these solutions to get the adoption. Two is even if there's noise, helping them understand the noise. And third is, taking the time to trust the solutions.
It's really interesting, you know, to hear you talk about human-centered design, because just a couple of days back, I was talking to someone and they were saying that when they approach any problem or they're looking at a solution, they're thinking about the end users, how they're going to be interacting with the product or solution, and really using those insights to make things easy and simple. I think increasingly as our world moves faster, technology is getting integrated into our lives, it's really important to focus on the user experience. And I think a lot of focus and emphasis is going in that space, the way people are interacting. So that interaction design is also an important piece. It's so interesting to hear you talk about that in the context of what you're doing in AI in the healthcare space, right? So it's really interesting to hear this from you.
It's with the world of software, it's a lot easier to do it than hardware, where you think of a solution, you can A/B test it or prototype it and then get validated feedback from users to then make the changes to make the product better. So the cycle development time and the cycle adoption time is much quicker as long as you get those inputs. And from my experience from the previous industries, whether it's games or other types of even AI solutions or other things, it was always getting the inputs, then optimizing it. And implicitly that becomes the UX, UI, user-centered design to make it more adaptable for better use cases. Yeah.
Sumit, in terms of future developments in AI, you know, do you foresee, any game changers in terms of healthcare infrastructure or in terms of how deeply AI is integrated into the entire service delivery process?
Well, so in the service delivery process of healthcare, I think there's going to be a lot of changes. I can't list specific examples, but I am anticipating many more solutions coming out there. And one of the aspects is a lot more voice-based processing, right? Even taking that one step further, because voice-based processing is a type of solution where you can speak and make the requests such that the agent then responds to resolving a solution, whether it's an insurance claim or life insurance claim and those type of aspects. So that'll make our lives a lot easier. And consequently, on the back end, it might be a machine too. So ultimately, you can resolve certain types of solutions even better. I do see, like I said, the end-to-end services of healthcare. I see a lot of initiatives, whether it's precision medicine or prototyping how molecules will interact. Or there's another end of the spectrum. There's this company I was interacting with for a while, and it's called Sorcero. And they focus on medical affairs management. And what that basically means is internally, these pharmaceutical companies have so much structured and unstructured data that sometimes it takes an analyst a long time or these people to figure out how to get the right results for the data they need for the pharmaceutical molecules and drugs. You compress that time and then you can reduce the delivery to market of these drugs. So there's those type of benefits, and there'll be more and more benefits. On the other end of the spectrum, another someone I'm related to is the founder of Hippocratic.ai, and he's developed all these agents that are highly specialized agents in different verticals where the service delivery, and it's focused on the service delivery, where a nurse can consult this agent live such that they can have proper recommendations to care as they're interacting with the patient. So I think those are going to be huge paradigm shifts, but people shouldn't be afraid of it, because just think of it as being complementary or augmentive to the solution you're trying to deliver. And in cases where you don't have enough staff, it really helps out. So I think there's very interesting solutions coming out, and the future is just going to be even faster, better, and more efficient.
It's amazing. It certainly seems that we have a bright future ahead of us. And I just had a question. You know, there are some industries that are looking at, you know, taking their machine learning engines and helping it work with, you know, synthetic data, not just organic data. And do you see that there are use cases of synthetic data that will happen in the pharma and healthcare space? Do you see that happening, or do you foresee that?
I could see that happening. I haven't worked as extensively with synthetic data because I guess I've been fortunate enough with my historical use cases that we had enough patient data and outcomes data. But that's not to say, I think it'll make it more efficient to make your models more better if you have a lot of the synthetic data. And maybe there's a baseline of, I'm just hypothesizing here without knowing much about, you know, baseline of all the pharmaceutical compounds, and you could infer some type of set of synthetic data and then process that accordingly. So yeah, to answer your question, I don't know enough, but I think it is going in that direction where people could use it to get to solutions better. But with the specific use case in molecules and pharmaceuticals, that'd be interesting to see the synthetic data. If it's not there yet, someone will figure out some set of standards to use it. Yeah.
There's also a really interesting use case that comes to mind, and I'm just sharing it here. Again, I'm not from the healthcare background, so please pardon me if I get this wrong. But I can imagine, you know, a critical care unit where, say, you have less staff and you have many patients and beds to monitor, and maybe there can be an AI assistant that is constantly listening to the sounds and movements of the patient. And it, of course, needs to be trained on the right kind of data, but it could, say, detect some abnormal sound or abnormal movement, and it could then send an alert or an alarm to, say, an attendant who's sitting at say, a central desk, and they can quickly run to that patient if they feel that that patient needs some extra care. Because even in a critical care unit, while you do have more staff and they're constantly making their rounds, it's not possible to monitor everyone 24/7. But maybe that monitoring could be done with the help of AI. What do you think, that it's possible at all?
I think that is possible. And you got me thinking, because there's these two, three other use cases of AI where I could see, if you put them together, this could work, in the sense there's this audio-based AI company that could infer the sounds better from a crowded environment and isolate that sound. And already we have use cases of AI that can look at the disposition of your face and even your breathing pattern to determine certain health parameters. So it's not too far to think, if you can put better capture the voice and use the voice to then modulate some type of response or alert system in a crowded environment. So I totally see that. There's another company called DeepWell DTX, which is getting a video game approved for meditation or to augment mental health states for behavioral health, you know, anxiety and depression. And I forgot specifically what it's getting approved for by the US FDA, but there, it's measuring your respiratory rate to determine what type of zone you're in, and then help you put it in a positive environment. So I'm just saying, with advances in natural language processing and the speech recognition and inferring all these different types of states, yes, I think it's highly possible that some type of solution can work in this crowded ER environment, which probably 5-7 years ago, none of us would have even thought of that. But I'm just putting 3 or 4 of those solutions together, and maybe that could work.
Right. It's so interesting. You know, the more you think about it, there are so many use cases that are possible, and I'm personally very excited to see how this space develops and evolves. We keep hearing about the use of AI in different sectors, but it's so interesting and refreshing to hear from you in how AI is being used in the healthcare space. And it was really interesting to talk to you and learn from you. So I just like to say thank you for making time, for coming on the pod and talking to us about this. You know, big thank you from all of us.
Okay, you're welcome. Nice to meet you again. Bye.
There were so many interesting points that Sumit covered. I'm still trying to wrap my head around all the interesting facets that he highlighted. As a viewer, I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Subscribe to our channel on YouTube to keep getting content like this. You can also follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Our handle is the Zista Podcast. Till we meet again, we'd say stay curious.